I call the May 7th, 2025 meeting of the House Senate Public Safety and Judiciary Conference Committee to order. Before we begin our meeting, I want to remind everyone that committee expects proper decorum at all times. All dialogue goes through the chair. Signs are not allowed in the committee room. There will be no outburst or clapping. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles is prohibited. If accommodation is needed, communicate with Sergeant Staff. Failure to comply with these guidelines will result in removal from the hearing room. I'd like to say thank you to the Sergeant at Arms staff who are present for helping maintain decorum in the committee room. We will begin the meeting with introductions of conferees and staff. Members, please tell us your district and your communities that you represent, your professional background. Staff, please tell us your role in the House or Senate. Chair Mueller, would you like to start it on your side?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kelly Mueller. I represent District 40A, Arden Hills, Moundsview, New Brighton, and Shoreview. When I am not in this space, I am a prosecutor. Thanks.
Ellen McDaniel, I'm the Committee Administrator for the House Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Representative Peggy Scott, 31B. I represent parts of the city of Andover, Ham Lake, Oak Grove, and all of the city of East Bethel, and two townships, Athens and Linwood. And when I'm not here, I'm a housing provider.
Marissa Mantefell, I am the Judiciary CA at the House.
Hi, everybody. Representative Tina Liebling, 24B, which is part of Rochester and a little bit outside Rochester. I'm an attorney, but I don't really practice law now, but when I did, I was a criminal defense lawyer.
My name's Anna Borgerding, and I'm also the House Judiciary Committee Administrator.
My name's Liam Edgar. I'm the CLA for the Judiciary Committee.
My name is Erin Bursey, and I'm the House GOP Researcher for Judiciary.
Isaac Pilon, House GOP Research for Public Safety.
Zach Meinertz, House DFL Research. I cover Judiciary and Public Safety.
Chair Jeff Beeble with House Research.
John Walls, House Fiscal Staff.
Ben Johnson, House Research.
John Hultquist, House Committee Administrator for Public Safety.
I'm Representative Paul Novotny. I represent 30B, which is Elk River, now then Oak Grove, and parts of Otsego.
I'm Ron Latz, represent Senate District 46, which is San Luis Park, Hopkins, and part of Edina. I chair our Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Budget and Policy Committee, so we're all combined in one in the Senate. I'm a lawyer in private practice, do mostly criminal defense work. Before that, I was in the Attorney General's office prosecuting driver's license revocation cases. I also do some employment discrimination work in private practice.
Nicole Kaplan, I'm the Committee Administrator for the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Claire Umu-Verbaten. I represent District 66, which includes parts of St. Paul, Vulcan Heights, Lauderdale, and Roseville, and serve as the Vice Chair of the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Senator Bonnie Westlin, I represent Senate District 42, which includes Plymouth, a portion of Maple Grove, and the city of Medicine Lake. And in my other life, I am a family law attorney and mediator.
Hello, Chair and all. Doran Clark, I represent Senate District 60, which is Cedar Riverside, Southeast Minneapolis, including the University of Minnesota and Northeast Minneapolis. Outside of that, I work for a large medical device company based in Fridley as an ethics and compliance officer.
I'm Judy Seeberger, Senator for District 41, which includes the cities of Grant, Lake Elmo, Afton, the Lakeland cities, Cottage Grove, Hastings, and the townships of West Lakeland Township, Baytown Township, Denmark Township, and Ninninger Township. I have been a practicing trial attorney for almost 30 years doing civil litigation defense. I am also a paramedic working for various agencies.
Jacqueline Clinton, Senate DFL Research.
Chris Turner, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Hi, Priya Primo, Senate Nonpartisan Counsel for Judiciary and Public Safety, and I cover civil law and data practices.
Ken Backus, Senate Counsel. I handle the criminal justice issues for the Senate.
Okay, I believe that's everyone. Chair Latz, would you like to have an opening statement?
I look forward to working with all of you to come up with a good target and policy bill.
Hoping to get a target. Chair Moore?
I'll just echo what Chair Latz said.
Thank you. We will not be taking any public testimony today, but representatives of some of the state agencies and the courts are here and are available for member questions. We will begin the conference committee with a walkthrough of the budget spreadsheets by nonpartisan staff. I believe, Mr. Waltz, you were leading this.
Mr. Chair and members, everyone should have a spreadsheet in their packets. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read all of the numbers. I will note that due to the fact that the Senate's targets were higher than the House, on most of the agency adjustments for insurance compensation, lease, and other costs, the Senate numbers tend to be a little bit higher, so I'll just note that there are differing agency adjustments. And I will highlight the discretionary items that came from each body. So starting on page one in the Supreme Court, we have the differing numbers for insurance, compensation, and salary increases. But on line 10, the House has some money for cybersecurity at $3.5 million. Both sides have a position on digital accessibility. And on line 12, the House includes justice partner access at $4 million. The Board of Civil Legal Aid, each side has an insurance and compensation amount that is slightly different. Court of Appeals, again, we have differing amounts for insurance compensation increases and lease costs. Moving to the district courts, again, we have insurance and compensation levels that are slightly different. The Senate includes a forensic exam rate increase from $136 to $165 per hour. That is on line 40. The House does not include a similar provision. On line 41, there is a psychological services fiscal deficiency included in both bills. And on lines 42 and 43 are House-only provisions for an interpreter fiscal deficiency and a jury fiscal deficiency. Mr. Chair, that takes us to page two. On the top of page two, the Guardian Ad Litem Board, there are slightly differing numbers for insurance and compensation. And on line 51, the House has a provision to include two new positions for supervisors of volunteer guardian ad litem. On line 56, the tax court, there are slightly different numbers for insurance, compensation, and lease costs. Uniform Laws Commission are identical. Board of Judicial Standards, there are slightly differing numbers for insurance, compensation, and lease costs. As well, on line 77, the Board of Public Defense, slightly different numbers for insurance and compensation. In the Human Rights Department, we have the differing numbers for insurance and compensation. However, on line 90, the House has a position. This was funding that was provided a couple years ago in the 2023 bill to report on human rights trends. The agency was able to do the reporting without the requested positions, and so this is removing the funding for the two positions that were in the fiscal note from 2 years ago, a reduction in $216,000 per year. In the Office of Appellate Counsel and Training, both include a provision that reduces classification of certain employee classifications, and that is a reduction of $199,000 per year, which takes us to the top of page three for the Competency Attainment Board. There are slightly differing numbers for insurance and compensation. Similar for the Cannabis Expungement Board on line 107. On line 114, both bodies have a position for the sealing of judicial property records. This is from House File 2127 or Senate File 2039, and that is a cost of $18,000 to the Secretary of State in fiscal year 2026. On line 119, the Senate has a position for the Attorney General's office, and that is from Senate File 1492. This is to begin a civil commitment division, and that's $438,000 per year. Under cancellations and revenue changes, both have a cancellation for the Appellate Council for Parents of $2 million a year. There are differing numbers in cancellations for the Cannabis Expungement Board and the Competency Attainment Board, but they are included in either bill. Mr. Chair, I would also note these come from 2023 appropriations. These essentially were new agencies that were getting underway and due to differing circumstances were not able to hire all the people that they needed and use the appropriated money. So those dollars are being recaptured and utilized for different purposes, but the each agency is not being interfered with in terms of their ability to complete their purposes up to the end of the fiscal year with the money that will be remaining in their appropriations. On line 127, the Senate includes an increase for the civil court filing fee. On line 128, the Senate includes a motion fee increase. Those are revenue to the general fund. And on line 129, there's the inclusion of Senate File 543, which is an increase to the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership, but includes a loss to the general fund of $446,000 per year. So on beginning on line 133, you see the subtotals for judiciary finance. In the House, the target was $30 million per year or per biennium, and the Senate had utilized $29 million compared to the House's 30 in fiscal 26 and 27, and used $50,197,000 in 28 and 29 versus the House's $30 million, which takes us to the provisions in the public safety area on line 140, sentencing guidelines. There are slightly differing numbers for the operating adjustment. Mr. Chair, that takes us to the top of page 4. For the Department of Public Safety in the Program of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, there are differing operating adjustments, but the Senate includes on line 155, Senate File 734, supplemental nonprofit security grants in an amount of $125,000 per year for 2 years. Under the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension on line 163, we have differing operating adjustments and slightly differing numbers for the state fraud and financial crime section. There were differing ways the targets approached this provision in both bodies, and so the House bill includes the money to fully fund the provision in the governor's budget at $1.8 million per year. This includes a new position at the BCA and two support positions at the Attorney General. The Senate does not include those three additional positions. Both carry the insurance fraud from the Department of Commerce, and that was $1.115 million in general fund and $215,000 from the workers' comp fund, although the way the targets approached this were slightly different. So the House makes this appropriation, as does Commerce, but the House has a provision to then go on and reduce the spending in the Commerce bill to make it budget neutral for this, for the House bill. Moving down to Fire Marshal, both bills are identical. In the Board of Firefighter Training, both bills are identical, which takes us to the top of page 5. In the area of gambling and alcohol enforcement, there's a slightly differing amount for the operating adjustment. Moving to the Office of Justice Programs, the House includes intensive peace officer training at $2 million per year for 2 years on line 217. The Senate does not. For on line 219, the Senate includes Senate File 2291, a prosecutor training grant. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, that's on both sides. There's $125,000 each year in the House bill and $100,000 each year in the Senate. On line 220, Senate File 1580, the Violence Research Center, the Senate includes $250,000 per year for 2 years. On line 221, Senate File 1835, the Legal Representation of Children, $100,000 per year, Senate only. On line 222, Senate File 1291, Moose Lake Public Safety, the Senate includes $50,000 a year for 2 years. On line 223, Senate File 1308, Shelters for At-Risk Youth, the Senate includes $150,000 for 2 years. And on line 224, the Senate includes $1,750,000 one time as an increase to VSET programs. Moving down to line 233, Emergency Communication Networks, both include the governor's request of $14 million from the E911 fund to maintain critical infrastructure. The House includes on line 237, $1 million per year for 2 years for armor local radio grants. On line 244, the Senate includes Senate File 2068, which is an ignition interlock bill, and $382,000 per year to fund that at Driver and Vehicle Services. These are dollars from the Driver and Vehicle Services Fund. Mr. Chair, that takes us to the top of page six. For peace officer standards and training or the post board, there are differing operating adjustments, but for Philando Castile Training Fund, the House has $5.5 million for this upcoming biennium per year and tails of $2,051,000. The Senate includes $6 million for 26 and $6 million in 27 with no tails. For the Private Detectives Board, there is slightly differing numbers for an operating adjustment. Under the Department of Corrections, there are differing numbers for operating adjustment. The Senate includes the governor's request for an increase, a bed increase for theft of public funds penalties on line 284. On line 285, Senate File 1163, cruelty to animals, there is a small bed impact. On line 286, Senate File 206, aiding and abetting, there is a felony murder. There is a slight reduction in the bed impact, and the savings are on line 286. On line 287, Senate File 2821, the Peace Officer Death Benefit Expansion, $30,000 a year for 2 years. On line 288, Senate File 1719, a task force on mandatory minimum sentencing. This is Senate only at $133,000 in fiscal year 26. On line 289, House File 130, increased penalties for first-degree sex trafficking, $13,000 beginning in fiscal year 2029. That is a bed impact. On line 290, House File 135, this is a bed impact for assaults on a jailer. On line 291, this is a bed impact from House File 897 and Senate File 456, fentanyl exposure of a child or vulnerable adult. Going down to community supervision and post-release services, there are differing operating adjustments, and the House includes on line 300 the governor's recommendation of reducing funds and eliminating the Department of Corrections participation in sentence to serve programs, and that's a savings of $1.7 million in general fund per year. Moving to the top of page seven, organization, regulatory, and administrative services with the Department of Corrections, there's a slightly differing operating adjustment. On line 314, you can see the totals for the Department of Corrections and the differences between the two bills. Going down to line 318, the Ombudsman for Corrections, there's slightly different operating adjustments. The same on line 327 with the Clemency Review Commission. On line 333, we have the general fund transfers. You can see the statutory transfer out of the general fund into the Community Justice Reinvestment Account. On line 338, both bills create a crime victims account in the Special Revenue Fund. The House deposits $8 million in 26 and 27 from the general fund and $2 million a year after that ongoing. The Senate puts a one-time transfer into this fund of $8,366,000 in fiscal year 2026. On line 340, there's a transfer. A recapture of money that was previously put into the Community Crime and Violence Prevention Account. These were from amendments that were on the Senate floor. 2 years ago, there was $70 million put in this fund for various uses to prevent community crime and violence. There's $42 million remaining in this account, of which $14 million per year goes to these purposes, and that money was transferred back into the general fund and used for certain provisions that were amended onto the Senate bill on the Senate floor. On line 342, there is revenue from House File 1082. This is also transferred into the crime victims account. This is from various penalties on criminal penalties on, I believe, sex-related offenses and on corporate criminal malfeasance. And that raises revenue of an estimated $1.6 million a year, again, going into the crime victim account. Other agencies, there is a reimbursement contingent appropriation in the Senate bill of $66,500,000. This is a provision that if money were to be reduced coming from the federal government to Section 8 recipients in the state of Minnesota, some general fund money in the housing bill would be reutilized to make sure that those rents were covered and to prevent evictions. On line 348, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, the fentanyl exposure of a child or vulnerable adult had an impact on that agency where they would need some, I believe it's reprogramming of computer systems, and there's a small cost there that is included on the House side. On line 351, the House has $500,000 for in-service use of force training. This is to the Office of Higher Education. And on line 352, this just includes the reduction of funds to the Commerce bill that is done in the House Public Safety bill to account for the moving in of funds for the insurance fraud unit from Commerce to the BCA. Mr. Chair, that takes us to the final page. There is on both sides on line 358 a charter school inspection fee increase. This is through the fire marshal. This is to slightly increase the fee for inspections on charter schools, and that's $37,000 per year. There were certain appropriations from 2023 legislation that were set to expire, but the uses had not been provided for. For some reason, there was a delay in utilizing the funds, and so these are given an extension in both the House and Senate bills. In the House bill, the Chippewa Tribe Coast Guard, the extension is to extend $2.5 million beyond the end of this biennium so that they can purchase their equipment. On line 365, the Senate had a similar provision of $5 million for Ramsey County juvenile placement homes. And on line 367, the Senate had a provision to extend peace officer death benefit funds. That's for $1.275 million per year. Mr. Chair, that brings us down to line 372. Those are various public safety subtotals in the area of public safety. The House had targets of $50 million in this biennium, $50 million in the tails. The Senate spent $67,990,000 in the upcoming biennium and $64,197,000 in tails. And then there are totals for the overall bill. You can see between the two areas, the House spent $80 million in the upcoming biennium, $80 million in tails. The Senate, $106,230,000 and $114,394,000 in tails. Their target included $9,091,000 for the fiscal deficiency in fiscal year 2025 for the Department of Corrections. That has traveled separately in Senate File 3196. that is now passed both bodies and sitting at the governor's desk waiting for signature. Mr. Chair, that completes the walk through the spreadsheet, and I would stand for any questions.
Any member questions for the fiscal staff? Mm-hmm. Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Wells, for that great walkthrough. I had a question about a bill that we both included. It was the fentanyl exposure of children and vulnerable adults, and there it's showing up in two places, one in DOC, and I think we matched the Senate on that line, and then it's also showing up on line 349, and I know our fiscal note showed a cost to children, youth, and families, and so I was just trying to, I don't know if we can figure that out now, but I just was curious why that might be different.
Mr. Walls.
Chair Mueller and members, the fiscal notes for both bills, I believe, was the same. The Senate just at this point has not chosen to put funding in for children, youth, and families. I don't know if that was an oversight or if the cost was such that they thought the agency could absorb.
Chair Mueller. Anyone else? All right. Next, we will have House Research and Staff Council, or and Senate Council, go through the side-by-sides. Will that be you, Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, staff's going to do a high-level walkthrough of the bills that are in the conference committee. We're going to follow the side-by-sides. The Senate has two bills that it's bringing to conference committee. The primary bill is House File 2432. It's the unofficial engrossment. They're also bringing Senate File 2200. That second bill has passed the Senate. It addresses confidentiality for restorative practice program participants. The House has three bills that are included in this conference committee. It's the third engrossment of House File 2432. Along with a public safety policy bill that's House File 1354 and a corrections policy bill that's House File 1659. Both of those have passed the House. There should be summaries of all of those bills in your packets or available online. I'm going to begin with an overview of the policy provisions in those first two articles and then do Article 3 as well before I turn it over to a colleague. So in Article 1, if you want to look at the side-by-side at page R5A1, there's a House-only provision. It's Section 19. That section authorizes the judicial branch to charge private attorneys a fee for remote access to certain documents and information as part of an expansion of the Minnesota Court Records Online System. On that same page, there's a Senate-only provision. It's Section 20. It increases the share of the dissolution fee that's transmitted to the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership from $30 to $60. And that's also the section that increases the fees for civil filing actions and the civil motions. I'm going to move to the policy provisions that are in Article 2. I'm on page R19 now of Article 2. There's a Senate-only provision there. It's Section 11. It adds a reporting requirement to the Community Crime Intervention and Prevention Program grants. On the next two pages, there are two provisions that are Senate-only sections. They expand the definitions of killed in the line of duty and public safety officer for the purposes of public safety officer and survivor benefits. Of note, those sections are both effective retroactively to February 1st, 2020. On R22, the House and Senate have similar provisions that establish the Minnesota Victims of Crime Account. And on R23, both bodies establish a penalty assessment on corporate offenders that is deposited into that new account. The sections are substantially similar, but they are not identical. On page R24 of that article, there's another Senate-only provision. It requires law enforcement to register with the federal e-trace system to report recovered and confiscated firearms, as well as some ballistics information. Moving to page R37 of that article, there's a Senate-only provision. It establishes a task force on mandatory minimum sentences. And the final policy provision in Article 2 is on page R40. In that section, the Senate establishes a process for retroactive claims for public safety officer and survivor benefits. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to Article 3. Article 3 of the Senate bill and Article 6 of the Senate bill are nearly identical. They both contain statutory changes that are related to the transfer of investigators from the Commerce Fraud Bureau to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. That transfer has already taken place. It was ordered back in February under authority in Minnesota Statute 16B.37. The majority of the article of the sections in these articles are technical changes. The main substantive changes are in Section 19. That's on page R12. And that's the section that establishes a new financial crimes and fraud section within the BCA, and it establishes the responsibilities and reporting requirements that are related to that new section. There are some minor technical differences between the House and Senate versions in that section. Mr. Chair, that's a high-level overview of those two articles, but they are primarily conforming changes. So at this point, unless there are questions on those articles, I'd ask that you recognize Mr. Backus to continue the walkthrough.
Mr. Backus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I'll continue then with Article 4 on the left side, the Senate side. It's called Criminal Provisions. On the right side, House side, it's Article 4 Public Safety Policy. Beginning on page R1A4 to R4A4, and in the future I'll be just referring to R1 or R2, whatever, but sections 1 to 4 are Senate-only provisions that amend the first through third degree and fifth degree controlled substance possession crimes to provide that a mixture does not include fluid used in bong pipes or any amount of controlled substances that are dissolved in a pipe's fluid. Page R4, House Section 1 is a House-only provision that defines fentanyl for the purposes of the next section. Next is Senate Section 5 and House Section 2, which amend the child slash vulnerable adult endangerment by methamphetamine exposure crime to include endangerment by exposure to fentanyl. The House also includes here an exception to the crime relating to manufacturers, pharmacists, and similar entities that the Senate does not have. The next two provisions are House-only sections, sections 3 and 4, bottom of page R5 to top of R6. These sections expand the situations in which the Commissioner of Public Safety must immediately suspend the person's driver's license to include all cases in which there's probable cause to believe the person has committed criminal vehicular homicide or criminal vehicular operation, and then remove the provision giving a person credit towards a license revocation for time spent during the period that the license was suspended. House Section 5 is a House-only provision that requires the Department of Corrections to maintain a supply of opiate antagonists and to provide training to DOC employees on their proper use. Senate Section 6 is Senate-only, bottom left of page R6. It requires offenders who violated the Senate's proposed childlike sex doll crime, which appears later in the article, to register as predatory offenders. Bottom right of page R8, and continuing for the next page, is three House-only sections, sections 6 to 8, that delay the sunset on the authority of the Commissioner of Corrections and counties to impose correctional supervision fees on inmates until 2029. Bottom right of page R9 is a House-only section, section 9, that authorizes the Department of Public Safety to use specified percentages of legislative appropriations for grant administration costs. Next, there's a House-only section, section 12 on R10 to 11. We should disregard this one here. The House amends the statutory section twice in different articles, and I'll address this in the corrections article. Bottom right of R11 is a House-only section 14, which requires that $10 from each marriage license fee be deposited in the Minnesota Victims of Crime account, which the House establishes in Article 2. And the actual fee is being increased by the House in Article 13. Continuing, bottom left of R12 is a Senate-only section, section 7, that amends the accomplice liability law to provide that a person may not be held criminally liable for either premeditated and intentional murders or simply intentional murders committed by another unless the person intentionally aided, advised, hired, counseled, or conspired with or otherwise procured the other person to commit the crime. Next is the House-only section, section 16 on R13. It requires a person sentenced for certain criminal offenses to pay an assessment in addition to any fine imposed by the court. Any money collected is to be deposited in the Minnesota Victims of Crime account, which the House creates in Article 2. Senate sections 8 to 11, R14, R16 are Senate-only and address felony murders, and provide that first-degree felony murders apply only to felony-level violations of the listed predicate offenses. They also limit second-degree felony murder predicates to the same predicates contained in the first-degree crime, and then require that to be convicted of second-degree felony murder, the offender's acts must present a special danger to human life based on the circumstances under which the predicate felony was committed. They also move the unintentional death arising from drive-by shooting crimes from one subdivision to another in the second-degree murder crime. Section 12 is a Senate-only provision on the bottom of R16. It increases penalties for physical assaults of firefighters, EMS personnel, or health workers in emergency room settings. House Section 17 on R17 is a House-only section that establishes consecutive or executed sentences for a person who commits an assault against a sheriff or sheriff's deputy while the person is an inmate of a county jail or other correctional facility, local correctional facility. Section 13 on the bottom left of R17 is a Senate-only provision that establishes two new felony offenses for adulterating or altering a controlled substance or drug with fentanyl or the drug's packaging. Senate Section 14 on R18 is a Senate-only section that amends the coercion crime to increase penalties for someone who threatens to violate the so-called revenge porn law to unlawfully blackmail another if doing this is the proximate cause of the victim suffering either great bodily harm or death. House Section 18, bottom of R18 and continuing to the next page, is a House-only section. It establishes a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years for a person who commits the offense of sex trafficking in the first degree, and a mandatory minimum sentence of 12 years for a person who commits an aggravated offense. Next, we have four consecutive Senate-only provisions beginning on R19 and continuing to R22. Section 15 provides an exception to the child neglect crime for acts committed while pregnant and before the birth of the child. Section 16 criminalizes approaching or remaining within 25 feet of a first responder with the intent of interfering with the person and failing to heed a warning to stay away. Section 17 establishes a new felony crime relating to the theft of public funds. Section 18 amends the crime addressing damage or theft of certain infrastructure to clarify that it includes broadband services and cable services equipment and to add references to street lighting, vehicle charging, and other public infrastructure. Senate Section 19 and House Section 13 on R22 address swatting correctional employees and are identical except the Senate has an effective date with the standard applicability clause. From the bottom of page R22 to R32, there are a string of Senate-only sections. Sections 20 and 21 expand the definition of pornographic work in the child pornography crime, and thus the scope of that crime, to include depictions of individuals indistinguishable from actual minors created through the use of artificial intelligence or other computer technology, and also provides immunity for this for certain actions taken by interactive computer services and similar entities. Sections 22 and 23 are modeled after the child pornography crimes and criminalize the creation, distribution, and possession of childlike sex dolls. Section 24 provides a process for individuals to get retroactive relief for past first-degree murder convictions for intentional and premeditated deaths that were based on an accomplice liability theory and where the person, the death was caused by another and the person did not intentionally aid, advise, hire counsel, or conspire with or otherwise procure the other person to commit the crime. Now, earlier in the article, in Section 7, the Senate proposes to prospectively prohibit similarly situated individuals from being convicted of this in the first place. The process specified here for retroactive relief is nearly identical to the process enacted in 2023 for retroactive relief for certain other individuals convicted of felony murder under an accomplice liability theory. Next, there are a string of House-only provisions to close out the article. These go from R32 to R35. House Sections 19 to 21 delay the required implementation date of the intensive comprehensive peace officer education training program until 2026. House Section 22 on page R33 extends the statute of limitations for arson in the first degree from 5 to 10 years. And then finally, House Section 23 is related to House Sections 3 and 4 from earlier in the article and expands the situations in which a peace officer must immediately report that there's probable cause to believe that a person committed any criminal vehicular homicide or criminal vehicular operation offense. Continuing, the next two articles will go a little faster because they're shorter. The next article is Article 5, Public Safety Provisions. And for this one, I'm going to take a slightly different approach off the bat and go somewhat non-consecutively. The Senate in this article makes some terminology changes to statute. So sections 1 to 4, 9 to 12, 17 and 18. So I'll repeat that. 1 to 4, 9 to 12, 17 and 18 are those terminology updates, and they relate to videotapes of child abuse victims and the terminology for pornographic works. On R2, Senate Section 5 and House Section 7 relate to the Hometown Heroes Program and are identical. Senate Section 6 and House Section 9 on R3 are similar. Both expand the definition of endangered in the Minnesota Missing Children and Endangered Persons Program. Both include persons with dementia and other cognitive impairments. The Senate includes also persons with autism and requires that there have been a diagnosis for any of the additions. Senate Section 7 and House Section 10 on R4 are identical and address background checks conducted by political subdivisions. Senate Section 8 and House Section 11 are identical, and they modify the amount the state fire marshal must charge for charter school building inspections. The remainder of the article are Senate-only provisions. Senate Section 13 on R10 to 11, and remember I'm skipping those terminology changes I mentioned earlier. That section amends the definition of crime or violence in the firearms law to add felony violations of the animal cruelty chapter. Section 14 on R11 amends the permit to carry law to provide that to require a permit holder who has changed their legal name to notify the issuing sheriff of this within 30 days. Section 15 expands the situations in which a law enforcement agency may use an unmanned aerial vehicle or UAV without a search warrant. Section 16 on R12 provides an exception to the general prohibition on the use of mobile tracking devices without a court order when used on a fleeing motor vehicle. And then Section 19 on R13 repeals certain consumer protection statutes related to matches, flame-resistant tents, and related rules and penalties that predate the fire code. The House repeals these provisions as well, but in a different bill, the House Commerce Policy Bill, which is passed off the House floor. Next article is Article 6. It's entitled Criminal Justice-Related Judicial Provisions. Section 1 on page R1 is a Senate-only section that authorizes a county attorney to subpoena and requires the production of specified records relating to wage theft investigations. Section 2 on page R2 is a Senate-only section and expands the post-conviction relief law to include stays of adjudication. Senate Section 3 and House Section 12 on R4 to R8 are substantively identical and relate to the privilege law and domestic abuse advocates. The only difference here involves the use of a that versus which, and eventually I would recommend the House position when you decide on that provision. Sections 4 to 7 on R8 to R12 are Senate-only sections, and they address expungements of certain cannabis-related offenses by modifying the offenses eligible for expungements and authorizes expungements for other offenses charged along with the underlying cannabis crime if the charge was dismissed or eligible for automatic expungement. Finally, Section 8 on page R12 is a Senate-only section that reinstates into law language related to reasonable costs and attorney's fees for prosecutorial appeals that was mistakenly omitted during a 2024 recodification and brought to the Senate's attention by the Board of Public Defense. Mr. Chair, that's the end of the article, and I believe Mr. Johnson is taking over again from here.
Mr. Johnson. Mr. Chair, I'm going to do Article 7. Article 7 contains the Senate's Article 7 and portions of House File 1354. This article addresses crime victim provisions. Most of these sections are either identical or substantially similar. On R1, both bodies add children's advocacy centers to the definition of victim assistance program for the purposes of allowing those entities to receive some portion of fines in criminal matters. And it also updates the term battered woman to domestic abuse victim. Beginning on the same page, the next two sections are carried by both bodies, and they amend the notice that must be given to crime victims. On page R4, there's a Senate-only section. That's section 4. It relates to notifying victims when an offender submits an apology letter. And then the remaining sections in this article amend the notice that must be provided to victims of domestic violence and authorize law enforcement agencies and prosecutorial offices to use their existing supply of written notices before using the updated language. Mr. Chair, that's all of Article 7. I'd ask you to go back to Mr. Backus for Article 8.
Mr. Backus. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the next article is Article 8, Correctional Provisions. These contain provisions proposed by the Department of Corrections. And here, while there are a large number of Senate-only provisions, nearly all of them relate to a single concept. In fact, with the exception of two concepts, the Senate and House agree and have either identical or substantively identical language on everything else. Similarly, in my walkthrough of Article 5, I'm going to go a little bit out of order here. First, I'm going to address all the Senate-only provisions. So Sections 1, 3 to 7, 9 to 30, 48 and 49. So again, 1, 3 to 7, 9 to 30, 48 and 49. These were proposed by the Department of Corrections, and they make changes to statute to reflect the proposed repeal in Section 51 of the Senate bill of the administrative rule governing the DOC's release hearing and release unit. Much of the rule was determined by the agency to be either obsolete, duplicative, or already in statute. For the most part, these provisions expand the scope of what is not considered to be a rule relating to DOC revocation decisions, and then replace references to rules on these matters with policies, which would be adopted by the commissioner. The basic effect of this is the department would not need to adopt formal rules in these matters in the future. Sections 2 on R2 and 37 on R18 are Senate-only sections. They were proposed by the department, and they strike references to a statute that permits the DOC to conditionally release an inmate to work at paid employment, seek employment, or participate in vocational training or educational programming, and that is being repealed by the Senate in Section 51. The remainder of the article involves, again, House and Senate sections that are either identical or have only technical differences. So given that, I'm just going to touch on the concepts. The sections include sections that modernize language on the American Indian Cultural Program statute, that streamline the distribution of tribal nation supervision funding and clarify what these funds can be used for. They make community supervision distribution modifications for DOC-supervised counties. They exempt federal law enforcement officials from the licensing and background requirements for individuals who are employed as protective agents when transferring incarcerated individuals. They make changes to the community supervision funding formula. They require that all counties share the costs on the interstate transfer unit. They modify requirements relating to the community supervision funding report. They expand the membership of the community supervision advisory committee and change a reporting deadline for the committee. They extend the mental health pilot program, allowing for the transfer of incarcerated individuals in county jails to the mental health unit and MCF Oak Park Heights for mental health treatment. And then finally, they repeal obsolete statutes relating to MCF Stillwater and St. Cloud. Again, given that the sections are identical, have only technical differences, it might be good that when the time comes to adopt those, you could nonpartisan staff could simply consult with the DOC and make recommendations on what the preferred approach would be for those technical difference ones. And Mr. Chair, that's it for that article.
Ms. Primo.
Mr. Chair and members, I will provide a brief overview of Articles 9 through 13. Article 9 begins on page R1A9. All the provisions in this article are Senate-only provisions. Sections 1 through 3 establish the Civil Commitment Coordinating Division within the Attorney General's office and requires counties to conduct diversion studies. Section 4 on page R4 establishes the transport hold work group to determine best practices for the transport of persons subject to emergency holds. Article 10 begins on R1, A10. On R1, Senate Section 1 and House Section 6 are similar and require the Board of Civil Legal Aid to provide a report to the legislature on data related to the services provided by each grant recipient. The only differences are the reporting date and the frequency of the reports. The remainder of Article 10 on pages R1 to R4 are identical in both the House and Senate and are policy provisions proposed by the judicial branch. Article 11 begins on page R1, A11. On R1, House Section 1 permits a government entity to provide data on a rolling basis and suspend further responses to a data request if the requester has not collected the copies within 5 days. On R2, Senate Section 1 permits a government entity to submit private data to the Commissioner of Administration to respond to certain appeals and permits the Commissioner to disclose that data to the Office of Administrative Hearings. On page R3, Senate Section 2 requires government entities to establish procedures to monitor access to private or confidential data on individuals. On page R4, House Sections 2 and 3 treat data on parents the same as student data for purposes of designating the data as directory information. On page R5, Senate Section 3 classifies all telephone numbers, email addresses, and online account information as private data and expands the purposes for which government entities may use that data. On page R6, Senate Section 4 classifies the name of a library patron who is a minor as private data and exempts the government entity from providing a Tennyson warning. On page R7, Senate Section 5 and House Section 4 are similar. Both expand the definition of public official for purposes of personal data privacy to all managers and heads of cities and counties, regardless of the size of the city or county. However, the House provision also expands the definition to members of the Met Council and certain administrative officers and heads of divisions within the Met Council. On R9, Senate Section 6 requires the release of active criminal investigative data related to missing persons cases involving a person who has been missing for 20 years, at least 20 years. On page R10, Senate Section 7 makes body camera data on an elected official charged with a felony public data 14 days after a criminal complaint is filed. On page R12, Senate Section 8 requires a law enforcement agency to provide unredacted copies of body camera data to a person who is entitled to a collision report. For now, I will briefly skip the identical provision at the top of page R13 and circle back to it at the end of this article. On page R13, Senate Section 10 and on R14, Senate Section 11 permit state agencies and local governments to reproduce records by any method and maintain those records in a manner and quality to ensure permanent records. On page R15, House Section 6 permits the Director of the Office of Emergency Medical Services to share certain overdose incident location data with the Washington-Baltimore High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Overdose Detection Mapping Application Program. On page R16, Senate Section 12 and House Section 11 are substantively identical and exempt the BCA from publishing on their website certain data that do not document the circumstances related to an officer-involved death investigation. On page R16, Senate Section 13 prohibits public and private entities from disseminating identifying data for purposes of researching autism as a preventable disease and provides for attorney general enforcement and remedies and penalties under Chapter 13. In addition to the identical provision that I skipped earlier on page 13, the remaining sections in this article provide for the protection of data about judicial officials and their families held within real property records. These sections are nearly identical. In addition to minor technical and clarifying changes, the main substantive difference is on page 24 regarding the cap on the amount of fees paid to the county or other government entity. The Senate caps it at $40 and the House caps it at $75. That concludes Article 11. Article 12 begins on R1, A12. The Senate only provisions in this article on pages R1, R3 to R8, and R9 to R11 make changes to the redemption process for a foreclosure by advertisement and clarify when a lien is created. However, House File 1027, which passed the House floor and is not reflected in the side-by-side, is substantively identical to these Senate provisions. The remaining three sections in this article on R1 to R3 and R8 are identical and govern the postponement of a foreclosure sale in a judicial foreclosure. So in essence, all of Article 12 is essentially includes essentially identical provisions in both bodies. Article 13 begins on R1, A13. R1 Senate Sections 1 and 2 and House Sections 1 and 2, as well as on R18 Senate Section 3 and House Section 13, govern the privacy and inadmissibility of certain data and statements related to restorative practices. The only difference is on page R1, Senate Section 2 and House Section 2, which impose different reporting requirements on the grantees. The Senate makes several changes in this article to laws governing the marriage application process and corrections to errors on marriage records. The first of these sections begin at the bottom of page R1, Section 1, line 195.24. And the remaining sections are scattered throughout Article 13 on page R8, Sections 8 and 9, R9, Section 10, R10, Sections 11 to 13, and R32, Section 23. The Senate and House have identical provisions beginning on page R2 to page R4. That make changes to the structure of the statewide office of appellate counsel and training. On R5, Senate Section 5 prohibits the use of certain technology to nudify an image or video. This section creates a civil cause of action against the person who allows access to the nudification technology for the creation of a nudified image or video, permits Attorney General enforcement, and imposes civil penalties that, if collected, are appropriated to DPS for grants through OJP. On R6, House Section 7 requires the guardian ad litem board to provide a report to the legislature related to data on the board's work. On R7, Senate Section 6 and 7 add cross-references to a 2024 enacted definition of violation for purposes of the landlord and tenant law. These cross-references are added for notice requirements in the escrow action statute and the tenant remedy statute. On R9, House Section 13 increases marriage license fees. On R11, House Section 11 modifies the definition of custodian for purposes of the order for protection law. On R12, Senate Section 14, and on R15, Senate Section 16, modify a guardian's ability to restrict communication and visitation for a person subject to guardianship, and requires there be a substantial risk of significant harm, and requires the guardian to use limited restrictions when possible. These two sections also impose additional notice requirements on the guardian. On R14, Senate Section 15 modifies provisions related to emergency guardianships and requires a petitioner to make good faith efforts to notify the respondent and their attorney. On R19, Senate Section 17 creates a civil cause of action for the non-consensual removal of a sexually protective device. There are several House-only provisions on pages R20 through R25. These modify laws related to forensic navigators and their duties and modify requirements for the Competency Attainment Board. On R26, Senate Section 18 establishes an order for protection against financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult. On R31, Senate Sections 19 and 20 modify effective dates for certain landlord and tenant provisions enacted in the 2023 legislative session. R31, Senate Section 21 prohibits a landlord from filing an eviction action against a tenant based on nonpayment of rent until at least 3 months following the date of the first delinquent rent payment if the tenant resides in housing subsidized by the Section 8 program. This section expires in November 2025. On R32, Senate Section 22 provides that if HUD withholds tenant rental assistance payments, the fiscal year 2026 appropriation to the Minnesota Housing and Finance Agency is reduced, and that amount is appropriated to the MHFA for reimbursements to landlords for lost income based on HUD withholding the tenant's rental assistance payment. That concludes my walkthrough of those articles. I believe Mr. Diebel will walk through the final article.
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, the document I'll be covering is labeled Article 14. This is not a portion of either the Senate or House omnibus bills. It is from House File 1354, and it contains House-only provisions. These, if agreed upon, would be integrated into the existing articles of the House and Senate bills. To begin with, on R1A14, sections 1, 2, as well as 8 further in the article, are from Chair Moeller's school safety provision proposal, and they require educating students and staff on the threat reporting system that currently exists and requires active shooter data to be reported to the state's fusion center with the BCA. Moving to page R3A14, section 3 at the bottom, this is a provision requires safe harbor reports on exploited youth to go to the legislature, and both the House and Senate have passed this provision. Moving to page R4A14, section 4, this provision establishes gross misdemeanor penalties for certain drivers who cause crashes that result in injury and for certain repeat offenders of our traffic laws. Jumping forward to R6A14 at the bottom on the House side is section 5. 5 and 6, as well as the last section of this article, are entitled the Larry Hill Medical Reform Act and would require jails to determine if inmates have a Jarvis order and requires jails to provide inmates with their prescribed medications, those that were prescribed prior to them being admitted to the facility. Mr. Chair, that concludes the overview as Section 8, as I mentioned, was a part of the Chair Moeller's school safety provisions, and Section 18 is the title for the previously mentioned jail drug bill.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel. Any member questions for the side-by-sides? All right, seeing that, there are four provisions that were in either the House and or the Senate versions that have passed both bodies as standalone bills and will not be pursued in this conference committee. They are House File 124, Senate File 1266, a gift authorization after a line of duty death, House File 129 and Senate File 2210, requiring a safe harbor evaluation report to be submitted to the legislature, House File 286, Senate File 803, expanding authorization of background checks for massage and adult entertainment business licenses, and House File 1163, Senate File 1427, amending the Hometown Heroes program for firefighters. There are policies that the chairs have given preliminary agreement to in conference committee, and we will have conference committee members give a brief description of each of those bills, starting with House File 1224, Freeburg, and Senate File 1 9962 Pappas on real property. I believe that's Senator Westland. It's Senate file 1962. We were told that you would give brief descriptions of each bill. Okay. What am I saying? Okay. All right, in the interest of saving time on that bill, we have agreed on House File 1027 West, Senate File 2338 Cruen, legal aid on foreclosures, 1295 Johnson, and Senate File 2299 Clark, Child Advocacy Centers. House File 1354 Moeller, Senate File 1859 Carlson, BCA 30-day window for body camera footage. 1862 and Senate File 2006 Kunish on appellate counsel and training agency bill. 1917 Anderson PH and Senate File 2062 Howe deletes population thresholds in city and county official definitions. House File 1998 Rarick and Senate File 2099 Umer Volbaten on OJP technical update to victim notification. House File 2300 Scott and Senate File 1098 Latz, judicial branch policy notifications. We've agreed on 1429 Liebling and Senate File 2499 Mohammed on emergency medical service overdose data. House File 2781 Pinto and Senate File 2979 Verbatim. OFP custodial definition modification. House File 3070 Liebling. Senate File no number on competency attainment board bill policy. And 1217 Witte. Senate File 1653 Limmer, legal name change notification for policy on permit to carry holders. House File 1265 Keeler, Senate File 1627 Kunish on DOC American Indian Cultural Programming Statute Modernization. House File 1546 O'Driscoll and Senate File 1578 Seeberger, outdated fire safety measures predating state fire code repealed. And finally, House File 1083 Moeller, Senate File 1055 Gustafson, domestic abuse advocates prohibited from disclosing information. Is there any other further member discussion on the conference committee today? Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think because we went through that very, very quickly, and I know members of the public are watching, I think it might be worth just to state that these are bills that were either that were same or similars, and in some cases they might have passed the floor in one body and not be in our bill that's before us. But so I just wanted to make that clear in case folks that are listening are a little confused, because we had originally kind of talked about having a bit slower process where we kind of talked a bit about what each bill is, and thank you for listing out kind of what they are for many of them. But I just want to make that clear for the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lee Wing. Any other member discussion? Chair Latz, we'll have the gavel for the next committee hearing. Chair Latz, is there anything you'd like to say about the next meeting?
Chair Novotny, for tomorrow, I understand Ways and Means Committee is going to be meeting and in the House, and we're on the floor at 1. We'll at least need to establish quorum in the Senate. So I think what we're going to do is have us meet at the call of the chair. Depending, I understand there's some members on Ways and Means that would have a conflict with this conference committee, so we can't really meet until Ways and Means is done.
And it's in this room anyway.
And it's here anyway, so in this room. So we don't even have a place to meet. So I think we have to wait until Ways and Means is done, because we can establish quorum more quickly probably than Ways and Means can make their decisions. We're also anticipating then going through same and similar provisions and hopefully adopting as many of them as we can. We get that portion of it out of the way. If we have questions, if we have time, perhaps we'll take some agency testimony if there's anything they'd like to share with the conference committee. So that's the plan for tomorrow, as far as I'm concerned. Anything else that you guys want to make sure is on the agenda?
That's all I have. Chair Mueller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was wondering if we're going to adopt the ones that we just went through today. Are we going to adopt those today, or is the intent to include those in the discussion tomorrow?
I've got a feeling that, you know, the chairs had a chance to take a look at some of this, but the other senators who are members of the conference committee have not had that opportunity yet. So now they've got a chance to take a look at what the chairs are conceptualizing as easy ones to agree to. But I think I want to make sure that the Senate members have a chance to take a look at that as well. So perhaps we can address that tomorrow as well.
Excellent point. Thank you, Chair Latz. There being no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned.